So let me begin the fourth lecture. So yesterday we looked at some classical statistical mechanical systems like liquid gas, and also another example, namely binary liquid mixture. So the idea of critical point exists in both systems. And I also pointed out that this critical phenomena in the context of binary mixture is also practically relevant in biological systems, where you have two components, namely, let us say, a simple liquid in which protein molecules, which are not small molecules, they are big molecules, but still you can think about them as a liquid which completely mixes, and then they keep doing their job. Under some conditions, they start phase separating, and in which you see inhomogeneity at all scales, particularly when it is close to the critical point of this miscibility, that leads to cataract and many, many things. I was just pointing it out. Then I went to a phenomenological theory, which was due to Van der Waals, how to modify Boyle's law, the ideal gas equation of state, to something more practical, which could at least explain existence of two phases, namely liquid and gas, and it could describe the critical state. So we talked about Van der Waals isotherms and so on. Then towards the end, I went on to approximate evaluation of partition function, because after all, partition function is a multidimensional integral. And is there a way to handle it? I very quickly pointed out that you can heuristically talk about hardcore repulsion between the particles and how it reduces the volume, which is what of that a particle effectively occupies, let us say, in a liquid. And that is what appears as a phenomenological term in modification in Van der Waals equation of state. Similarly, attraction between particles appear as another term. So it could be rationalized either by doing a systematic evaluation of this multidimensional integral, by expanding it in powers of some two-body interaction term, Fij, which is related to virial expansion. I just pointed it out. And then I also pointed out towards the end that entropy is something very, very fundamental in statistical mechanics. If you look at the ideal gas, the entropy actually is what is contributing to the pressure that you measure. So a dramatic example is, I pointed out, rubber elasticity. There, the elasticity that you measure in your time scale, when you pull it slowly, is not coming from stretching atomic bonds. It's coming from reducing available configuration space for the polymer to explore. So it's a purely entropic effect. It's amazing. And similarly, in ideal gas, the pressure seems to be a purely entropic effect. And then these ideas have gone a long way in emergent gravity, and people talk about gravitational force as arising from some entropy. Maybe you will hear about some ideas about it from David towards the end of this course. Okay, this is a review of what I did yesterday. So today I am going to go into quantum statistical mechanics. As far as Boltzmann or Gibbs Boltzmann distribution is concerned, at the end it does not distinguish between classical and quantum, because we have the case of the energy function, which is a function of all position and coordinate, and then you will have to integrate over all p and q. This is a prescription. So if you don't have the integral, this is a probability of finding, let's say, the system at this point in configuration in phase space in this interval. And then if you integrate it, of course, you get what is called partition function, which is like a generating function. It gives you all the physical quantities that you want. According to Gibbs and Boltzmann prescription, it's essentially the same when you come to quantum statistical mechanics, What you bother about it is you go to Hilbert space, and you have a Hamiltonian system. Look at the energy eigenvalue. And you say that every state, any, a state that has an energy eigenvalue E alpha, has this probability of occurrence. And you sum over all such states. So it has a striking similarity there, very similar. Except that when you start writing, rewriting it, it starts becoming similar, because it turns out now what you have done is you have written this in energy basis. You started with a quantum mechanical problem. You chose energy eigenstates. And in terms of that energy eigenvalue, it has a very simple form. So in general, you may find it very convenient to start with this operator. You have a many-body system in which there is a Hamiltonian which contains momentum and position which do not commute. So you can rewrite this as, for example, this is what it is. That is, you take this and then take the trace of this, particularly if you take the trace in the energy eigenstate basis, you get this. So nothing prevents you from having some other basis, let's say, some basis M, which is not an energy eigenstate, then in principle, such a trace should give you the partition function, because it may turn out for certain problems, you may not like to work in energy eigenstate, because even though formally it's easily stated, getting a many-body energy eigenstate of a higher energy may be very, very complicated, except in simple cases. So you may like to go to other representation. So you often call it as thermal density operator or density matrix in the context of quantum. I'm not going to labels, equations in the context of quantum and deriving this and so on. It's given nicely in various books. So I should mention there are two books that, you know, where many things are worked out very well. One is Kersen Huang. StatMech, and Landau and Lipschitz, things are worked out, and lots of discussions and talks, and then Patria, and of course Wikipedia. For every topic, you have enough information available and links and so on. So this is, you know, quantum statistical mechanics in a nutshell is evaluating this kind of averages. This is just a formally. Now the next thing I want to do is I want to take specific example. Already we saw Boltzmann gas, classical gas, then as well as classical liquid, and we have some understanding of them. Then when you come to quantum gases and quantum liquids, things becomes much richer. In fact, the first step towards that is historically a gas of boson, the famous work of Planck. It's amazing that statistical mechanics gave a clue to the quantum nature of, you know, the quantum secret of nature. Because Planck was worried about black body radiation, the distribution of intensity of photons as a function of its frequency or wavelength did not fit with classical statistical mechanics or classical electrodynamics. Classically, you could imagine very short wavelength electromagnetic radiation of arbitrarily small amplitude. And then if you do calculations, you find inconsistencies and all kinds of problems. Then Planck said that when you go to high frequency, these electromagnetic modes should be quantized. That is, they have some energy, minimum energy, which is a quant of that particular mode. So as you go to shorter and shorter wavelengths or higher and higher frequency, the energy keep increasing. So those modes don't get excited because they're down from the Boltzmann, by the Boltzmann factor. So just that single observation that it's not right to think about electromagnetic mode in terms of amplitude of that mode as a continuous variable. There is something else happening which says that you don't bother about amplitude. You say that every mode is described by a particular minimum quanta, which is the energy of a single quanta, and then you can have two quanta, three quanta, and so on. So this hypothesis of Planck brought in the famous Planck's constant to make agreement with black body radiation formula. So a quantum secret was revealed through a statistical mechanical analysis of photons, which later was found to be boson. And then Einstein, in a famous paper where he introduced the A and B coefficient, where he looked deeply into the wave as well as particle character of photon, as expressed when you study an emitter and a radiation field in equilibrium. He also landed it with Planck's distribution function, but the coefficients of the distribution function has to be fit using the high frequency distribution and Wien's law and the other law. So it was somewhat incomplete. This is when Bose came. It's a very nice thing to read, this paper of Bose. It's available in the archive. The English translation is available. So the story is that he basically used Planck's idea that there are oscillators and they can be excited in terms of quanta. You can have one quanta in a mode or two quanta and so on. So he did a very careful job of enumerating that state, implicitly assuming that they are indistinguishable. So he was essentially, what he did was he said that I have modes which is characterized by k, and then they have some energy epsilon k, and then there is some number of those photons in that mode. Let me say that this is fixed. That is, I am at a particular temperature. I will introduce temperature soon. So this is like microcanonical ensemble. I have a total energy fixed. Then he essentially found out, how do I distribute this quanta in various modes? Just combinatorial argument. And then he looked at the limit in which the number of quanta are large, and then he beautifully landed in Bose distribution function. And he writes that while Einstein's derivation is very satisfactory, but there is some issue of logic, that is, because he uses known laws. So without bringing in any extraneous information, just from the Planck's hypothesis and indistinguishability, Bose gets everything correct, including the statement that every electromagnetic mode has 2 degrees of freedom, namely polarization, which we know currently, we learn in terms of the fact that photon is a spin one particle, and then only 2 degrees of freedom are accessible because it has zero mass. So the other one is kind of tied to the particle motion. So that also fact also empirically came in beautifully in Bose's theory. So then this was a boson. We will discuss. Then the next important thing in the development of boson was Einstein's trying to understand, in similar vein, a very simple experimental fact, which was working against the equipartition theorem. In classical mechanics, we learn that every degree of freedom, like motion in one direction, carries an energy of half kT. So a particle, because it has 3 degrees of freedom, will carry an energy of 3 kT. So if you calculate specific heat, you will get a constant, famous Dulong-Petit's law. But if you look at the specific heat of diamond, for example, Einstein and others noticed that while at very high temperature, Dulong and Petit's law is true, it keeps coming down even at room temperature. Let's say 300 Kelvin by a substantial amount. So there was a very clear violation of Dulong-Petit law. And Einstein, this is where he brought in this beautiful idea of phonons. He said, if you think about a solid, it's a kind of self-consistently bound system. Every atom attracts its neighbors, but they can't come too close away because there's a hardcore repulsion. So every atom finds a house for its own, then undergoes some harmonic vibration. So he said that every atom can be represented by a harmonic oscillator, and it has a definite frequency. So he called it as H cross omega naught. So according to Einstein, a solid, if you want to understand its thermal property at low temperature, should be thought of as a first approximation, as a collection of harmonic oscillator of a definite frequency. For diamond, it may have some value. For calcite, it may have some other value. For sodium chloride, it may have some other value. And what is remarkable is, like in the case of Planck's distribution, these modes, while at very high temperature, these atoms can have continuous motions and you can have large amplitude. But when you come to low temperature, these are all harmonic oscillators. Their energies are discrete. So the least energy a mode can be in is the ground state is half h cross omega naught, and the next state will be plus h cross omega naught in general n. So when you go to very low temperature, you won't excite these modes. They will not be simply there because of Boltzmann factor that appears in statistical mechanics. So that already tells you that internal energy will keep decreasing with temperature, and then if you do a calculation, you'll find specifically it becomes very small. So this was a triumph of very simple model of Einstein's theory of solid. Then people like Debye corrected it. They said that when you consider a solid, it's not that there is a single frequency, because every atom is connected to other, there can be collective oscillations also. So according to Einstein, if you look at the spectrum, that is what is called omega of k as a function of k, where k is this 2 pi by lambda, for example, kx, where lambda is a wavelength. According to Einstein, this dispersion is flat. It's at some omega naught. Debye pointed out that if you do a careful theory of atoms, Debye said that, in fact, it will look like this. And there may be optical branch and so on. So that means there are oscillators with very small frequency. So they could get excited at low temperature. So there was a beautiful correction to Einstein's theory. Einstein's theory said that the specific heat became exponentially small. Debye's theory told you that it will follow so-called T-cube law. So these are all important modifications. Then the whole field of lattice dynamics came. So using this very simple free bosons, you can achieve a lot. You can understand thermal radiation, statistical mechanics of thermal radiation. You can understand statistical mechanics of phonon gas in a solid. And the most remarkable discovery by following Bose's work is the work by Einstein, which led to the discovery of Bose-Einstein condensation. So today, the rest of the talk, I will discuss two kinds of quantum gases. One is bosons, free bosons. Why I'm going to discuss in some detail is because in this course, we want to focus on critical phenomena and some universality. It turns out, even these free bosons, because of the so-called Bose statistics, it undergoes some profound condensation, which is a genuine thermodynamic phase transition. And it can be worked out in great detail, in analytic detail, as done by Einstein. Then I will discuss another species of particles which abounds in nature, which are fermions. Electron is a fermion. And if you talk to this year's Nobel Prize winner, neutrinos are fermions. And there are other fermions. And in our proton is a fermion, neutron is a fermion, neutrino is a fermion. For condensed matter purpose, for many statistical mechanics, we will be dealing with electron gas. For example, electrons in a metal like copper. And thanks to work by Pauli and Fermi and several others, that we have very good understanding of the basic model system, namely Fermi gas. And it's very straightforward to do thermodynamics of that, which is what I will do, statistical mechanics of free Fermi gas and free Bose gas. And yesterday, in the past lectures, I said that we go from microcanonical to canonical to grand canonical. So I said that as you go up in the scale, the analysis becomes more relevant real systems, because if you consider a subsystem, there is exchange of energy, there is exchange of number of particles also. And also, in addition, I pointed out, there is also ease in mathematics. That is, the mathematics of grand canonical system becomes much simpler than counting. In fact, which is what I will illustrate today. It turns out, if you consider free Fermi gas and free Bose gas, if you work in microcanonical ensemble, it's very cumbersome, the combinatorics. You need to know combinatorics. If you work in canonical ensemble, where you fix the number of particles, there also it's very cumbersome. Whereas if you go to grand canonical ensemble, without knowing combinatorics, you can solve the problem. And you can solve it in its full analytical glory and get and recover microcanonical, canonical ensembles and so on. And another important point about bosons like photons or phonons, unlike a classical gas where in a given full system, the number of atoms are conserved in our time scales. Atoms don't annihilate, atoms don't explode, so they remain stable. Whereas if you consider thermal radiation, depending on the temperature, the number of photons is a variable. Similarly, if you consider a solid, the number of phonon excitations is a function of temperature. So grand canonical ensemble is the only way to describe the system, because the number is not fixed. With this in mind, we will go to free Bose gas and free Fermi gas. I want to send this up. Okay. Now I'm going to discuss. First, let me finish off free Fermi gas. In a free Fermi gas, nothing interesting happens, but it's an important system, because it turns out it is a home for many interesting quantum phenomena that we see in condensed matter these days. It could be SPT phases that people talk about in Mott insulators, or it could be a fractional quantum Hall state which supports Majorana-Fermion excitations or Fibonacci anion excitations. So a variety of modern quantum phases that we are all worrying about. Quantum phases are built out of fermions in the presence of interaction among fermions and in the presence of an underlying periodic lattice. So it's very important to understand free Fermi gas, which is the mother of all these things. And since this course is on statistical mechanics, phases are very important. Change from one phase to another phase, phase transitions are important. But it turns out the study of phases alone is not statistical mechanics. It's like study of ground state of interacting system. For example, you have a Fermi gas. We know how to describe it in the ground state. Then it turns out this Fermi gas has a very strong susceptibility to undergo pairing, Cooper pairing. So a small disturbance, namely an interaction of electron with the lattice vibration, leads to a modified ground state, which is a superconducting state. So now the most remarkable quantum phases in nature, where even at finite temperature, quantum mechanics stares at you. It's not hiding. So there are so-called macroscopic quantum phenomena like Josephson effect and other tunneling, which is there even at 100 degree Kelvin in some of these high temperature superconductors. So somehow quantum mechanics rises and comes to higher temperature scale. So that is something possible from Fermi gas in the presence of interaction. So it's very, and then once you have these fermions interacting very strongly, for example, in what is called a Mott insulator, the charged area of freedom becomes suppressed because they are kept at home by strong Coulomb repulsion between neighbors. But however, spins are free to move around. Now those quantum degree of freedom can organize themselves into very beautiful phases, ferromagnet, antiferromagnet, quantum spin liquids, and a variety of things. So electron gas or electrons that we are very familiar in condensed matter organize themselves in a variety of ways and gives rise to novel phases. In fact, lots of effort these days, including efforts at perimeter, is going on how to classify these novel phases that an electron offers to you. Okay, so that's why we want to study Fermi gas. It's a fundamental, I'm sure you have all read about it, so there is no, so I will not go into the derivation, but some very beautiful notions came historically, namely the notion of Pauli pressure. That is a Pauli principle. When you look at it from statistical mechanics point of view, tells you that there is an internal quantum pressure, and it is this quantum pressure apparently which holds stars together. That is, there's a gravitational collapse when you come to white dwarfs and so on, and then there is a Pauli pressure because it's mostly electrons. So the two balance and you have some stable, and there is Chandrasekhar mass limit and a variety of things follow from very simple physics of this Fermi gas. Now when we do all these things, we imagine some box of free fermions or free Bose gas and use periodic boundary condition because we use block states. And if you have open boundary condition, the Fourier transformation is not convenient because you have to put some boundary condition. Once you have periodic boundary condition, you can just think about running waves and they will form a good complete set. In other words, single particle wave function in quantum mechanics in free spaces, this is a state that carries a momentum h cross k, or if it is a vector then this is a momentum, but then I want to fix the value of k. In free space all values are low, but in solids, you know, there is a boundary. So there is a famous periodic boundary condition which says that, let me take one dimension, it says that if I start from here and then come back, basically I traverse the distance of L, the wave function should become the same. So this should become 1. So that immediately tells you that this kx times L is equal to 2 pi times some integer, very simple. It can be n equal to 0, 1, minus 1, and so on. So in other words, kx gets quantized in units of this fundamental thing. Now if you think about momentum, momentum gets quantized in units of this, which is h by L. That's it. Okay. Now, these are all the points in, like we had phase space points in quantum mechanics, classical mechanics. Now these are all the quantum numbers that a boson or a fermion can take in a period in the presence of periodic boundary condition. So we often have sums over this discrete value of k. For example, this k is bound to have behavior value like this. So we have sums like this. And L becomes thermodynamically large, right? It becomes 1 centimeter, which is much large compared to particle dimension. So it's very accurate to replace this sum by integration. So what do? You say that you call this as some continuous variable k, then multiplied by some unit element, small element, and then divide it by that. Then this becomes f of k, so the famous integration. So dimensionally everything is fine. So you replace a discrete sum which becomes quasi-continuous and essentially continuum by this trick. So if you are working in three dimension, you will have three, then you will have summation over k. So these are all things that will routinely you will do when you study quantum statistical mechanics of bosons and fermions in free space. Now, this is what we call as k-space. For example, if you look at particle moving in one dimension, this is kx, you have 0, and then you have things go everywhere. But when you consider particle motion in the presence of a periodic potential, then you all know the idea of Brillouin zone comes. Then you basically say that you restrict yourself to some range of momenta because you are seeing a periodic potential. Everything else can be folded and so on. I will not go into detail, but this is something very basic. So with this in mind, let's do free Fermi gas in grand canonical ensemble. So my idea is to find out partition function of free Fermi gas. So these are all the parameters that will be there. So firstly, I want to express the Hamiltonian of free fermions in this basis in which it is diagonal. Because in terms of so this is the Hamiltonian. But now I want to input the information that these particles are fermions. So I want to go to Fock space and so on. At the end of the day, that essentially tells you that free particle has a Hamiltonian, which is simply with the restriction that this nk is either 0 or 1. So my Hamiltonian in momentum space, we say, has become diagonal. And the entire information about antisymmetry of the fermionic wave function, and that it's fermion, a Pauli principle, everything is contained in this particular restriction. So this is a Hamiltonian. Looks very simple because I need to know only 0 and 1, and I have to do some counting. Now it is this, you know, which leads to the notion of Fermi-C, which you all know. I will not go into it. For example, if you take free particle, it tells you that kx, that is, you can start, in order to get the ground state, you can start adding a particle at every point in the allowed value of k. Then you cannot put two particles, so you keep, in order to get the ground state, you fill this k space isotropically, and you get a sphere which is called the Fermi sphere. It's a very beautiful object. Now, this is the state in momentum space. You can actually write down the wave function in real space of this n particle system using Slater determinants. These are all things that you know. That is, the case that will occur will be all the filled state. Now, you can imagine solving the free Fermi gas problem using this wave function, like doing the trace by going to Slater determinants and so on, and you can imagine how messy it is. But in this, it's very, very simple. So this is what we will use for both Fermi gas and Bose gas. Now, when it comes to bosons, it's identical Hamiltonian. Free Bose gas has identical Hamiltonian, except that there is no restriction. In principle, a boson mode can have 0 quanta, 1 quanta, 2 quanta, and so on. So the combinatorics is going to be different. That leads to profound modification. In terms of wave function, in one case, they are identical particle. It allows only antisymmetric wave function. In the other case, it allows only symmetric wave function. And it's amazing. All this is expressed in this difference, this or that. And we will see how, in the case of Bose gas, new phenomena, which is related to this, we call it as a bosonic coherence, appears in a very beautiful way as Bose condensation. Okay. Now let us come to this partition function that I wanted to say. So it is going to be So I will introduce, as in the previous case, fugacity. That is something that is going to weigh, give a weightage to a particle configuration having n number of bosons or n number of fermions. Then, of course, I have my partition function. Now, I have some over all possible. Then, now, since I know that in this case, or in this case, n is, that is a sum over all possible k values, and that number has to be n. That is the n that I am talking about. So I solve the problem for a given n, and then solve for every n, and then sum over. So this I will replace it by. Now, what is this? This is very simple. It's basically the old Boltzmann factor. Epsilon k, I will keep changing. I will call epsilon k just this, all possible k times nk. And then I am restricting this sum to an n value. And then again, that same thing goes here. In my mind, I assume that the sum over nk is equal to capital N. Then I sum over n. Now you can convince yourself this is equivalent to product over. So further, Z has a standard form. So Z can be rewritten, the fugacity, in terms of temperature, inverse temperature, and so-called chemical potential. This is what you learn in grand canonical ensemble. So in terms of that, it becomes, so this is e to the power of minus beta. So what you have is you have minus beta epsilon k minus mu times k. And this is the partition function. The grand partition function can be rewritten, as we can go from here to here immediately, as the partition function of every mode that I have. So I have a mode k, or a momentum, a load value of momentum. That particular momentum, I can have particle 1 or 0. So it's an enormous simplification. So this is a grand partition function. I don't use any combinatorics. I immediately get my expression, namely that's it. Or if I want to rewrite it, I can read it as minus log of, because when I take log, the products become sum. So this is the expression for the grand partition function, where I have chemical potential, volume, temperature. So no combinatorics. I have simply used a formal expression for grand partition function and rewritten that number in terms of number of particles distributed in various modes, and then combine them. And find, lo and behold, it becomes partition functions of individual modes. And then you get this. This is well known. For Fermi distribution function, everything is fine. No, nothing dramatic happens. So we will quickly go to Bose distribution, where something dramatic happens. So I'm slowly learning things, thanks to one student who pointed out that I should display whatever I have done in the board there. That's the purpose. I didn't realize it till yesterday. Okay. So now this is fairly so given from here, you can actually calculate mean value of fermions in a given. This is a famous These are all things that you have done. Famous Fermi distribution function. This as a function of temperature has this behavior at low temperature, and at zero temperature it is a sharp distribution function telling the existence of a Fermi C and so on. So, this is straightforward. Now, one thing that I want to point out is that you can see by going to very high temperature similarity of these two classical gas, because eventually when you heat the system at very high temperature, it is intuitively clear the statistics should not be very important. So, it should go to ideal gas form, but with some small modification. And it is interesting to see, I do not know how many of you have seen it before, but it is just straightforward that you start getting some van der Waals type form now. Where is that? So, if I take this and then once I have grand partition function, I can calculate it is directly P times V. So, you get the expression for P equal to KT, and there are corrections. For the case of fermion, as you would have expected, you get a correction which is lambda divided by rho. You remember in yesterday's discussion, we van der Waals equation have had form minus. So, this came from attractive interaction. If you look at this, what you find is at very high temperature, you recover classical gas, but ideal gas equation of state, but there are corrections which is positive, telling that it is as if there is repulsive interaction among fermion, and this repulsion is just a consequence of quantum statistics. To begin with, there are no interaction among the particles, but somehow the quantum statistics, namely the forcing of antisymmetry of its quantum state, the wave function, mimics some kind of repulsive interaction at very high temperature. So, this is a very important. And similarly, when you come to very low temperature, you get the famous expression for pressure, which is related to the so called Fermi pressure. So, you can get this. Times some 1 plus. So, at zero temperature, the pressure exerted by a gas of fermions is proportional to the Fermi energy, and then it is related to the density of fermions. Now, it turns out when you work this out for relativistic particle, where the dispersion relation is different, for relativistic particles you will have to have mc square plus square and so on, and then when the Fermi energy is very large, the energy will start being proportional to momentum. So, that will lead to some correction, and this dependence will vary, but that is what used by Chandrasekhar and others in finding limit of collapse of a star. That is, at what point the relativistic electron gas will give up and collapse due to gravitational attraction. So, this is a very useful thing for astrophysicists, which fetched Chandrasekhar Nobel Prize many years ago. Okay, so I will stop as far as discussion about Fermi gas at this point and then go to Bose gas, except to point out that it looks like the organization in momentum space is non-trivial. There is a Fermi surface. Then as you heat the system, so to say, the fermions evaporate from the Fermi C. They go to higher state, leaving holes behind. So, they are so called particle hole excitations. But it is interesting, in this description it looks very simple, but you can go to other dual descriptions in terms of dynamics of Fermi surface, and that becomes very important when you come to interacting fermions. Then you can describe excitations of a Fermi-C in terms of so-called Tomonaga bosons. And then in one dimension, it can be done very exactly using so-called Luttinger liquid theory and get very non-trivial behavior of interacting fermions in lower and higher dimension. So, but this is at the heart of most of these things. Another thing I wanted to point out is this Fermi gas looks very innocent, but it has a critical behavior as you reach the critical zero temperature. We saw that in the context of liquid gas, we had a critical point. Solid, liquid, gas at finite temperature. But it turns out the free Fermi gas in three dimension or two dimension, any dimension, as you reach zero temperature, it exhibits a critical behavior. Normally, critical behavior in systems, which you will see in detail, comes with singularity in the thermodynamic variable. And one of the dramatic singularity, you know, is divergence. If something becomes infinity, as you reach the critical point, you say specific heat diverges, or sometimes susceptibility diverges. And there is one quantity that diverges for free, even free Fermi gas, which is related to so-called pair susceptibility. That is, it's a, the question is, how susceptible is this fermion system to attraction among electrons? And this is a famous BCS theory. It's built on that susceptibility. It says that you take this free Fermi gas and add a very feeble attraction among the electrons. And however tiny the attraction may be, the free Fermi gas undergoes very profound modification in its state, and it occurs Meissner effect and superconductivity. So I will not have no time to elaborate on that. I will just say this is called pair susceptibility . Now, how do I define susceptibility? We will do it later when we come to phase transition. But I just want to point out, since you are learning field theory, it's the following quantity. I am dealing with fermions. In field theory, you deal with fermions in terms of fermion field operators. You say there exists a Fermi field at a point, and then the fermions I am considering are like physical electrons, so it has a spin index. So I look at a pair creation operator which creates an upspin electron and a downspin electron. And then I look at a far away point another pair. In other words, I annihilate an electron pair at the point r prime and put it at some other point r. So this is an operator, and I calculate the thermal average of this. I can do statistical mechanical averaging, because here I have avoided, in whatever I did, second quantization and description in terms of field operators. But for free Fermi gas, you can do it very easily. And you can calculate it in terms of some diagrams, loops, and so on. And at the end of the day, what happens is that this quantity, let me call it as f, as a function of r minus r prime, that is, it's like asking the question, this is more physical in some sense. That is, I take the vacuum, let us say ground state or even at finite temperature. I inject a pair of electrons at the site r in a spin singlet state. Then ask the question, what is the probability I will be able to find out another pair at a distance separated by r minus r prime? So in general, you can imagine as the particle moves, because they are identical particle, there can be constructive interference and things may become very messy. But for fermion system, this pair amplitude has some power law behavior, some alpha, at zero temperature. Now, that means, so let me call it as, so susceptibility is often related to integral of this quantity. Let me choose one of the point to be the origin. And if it falls sufficiently fast, this, suppose this is, it goes as 1 over alpha. If alpha is greater than 2, I will start getting logarithmic divergence and so on in integral. So this is what happens. So the system is very sensitive to pairing processes in which if there is a small attraction, a pair of particles would like to become like a boson and then coherently move in the ground state. So this is the meaning of pair susceptibility divergence of a free Fermi gas. So in that sense, a free Fermi gas, however simple it may look like, has a critical behavior in the ground state. It's a critical state. It's not like a critical state in a gas liquid situation. It's some somewhat different universality class, but all the same, it's very interesting in its own right. Okay. Now the next thing I want to do is, let's say I have exhausted. So I want to display all the three. I'll go to the next slide. So let me, in the next 10, 15 minutes, I will finish Bose gas. And let's see. So I pointed out how to evaluate the partition function. For the case of fermions, you got this. For the case of bosons, this won't stop at n equal to 1. It will keep going. You have a geometric series. So that automatically leads to the grand partition function for a fermion to be product over all k for the boson. It's a very simple form. Now you have to, for the case of fermion also, supplement it with another condition, another equation, which will determine mu, because I have a parameter mu, which is a chemical potential, which is going to determine the mean value of mu. So what I should do is, I should take the thermal expectation value of n for boson or fermion, and say that's equal to the number of particles, fermions or boson I have. So this is a very important supplementary condition. For the case of bosons, you know that this n of k is a Bose distribution function. So sometimes people write it in terms of fugacity. Okay. And this is equal to n. It's a very simple looking equation. So if I substitute it's remarkable that when you think about fermions where you have similar problem, if you give me any density, any number of particles, you can always find a chemical potential which will satisfy this equation. So this prescription of putting a Lagrange multiplier and controlling the mean density works very well. And Einstein noticed, while doing a very careful job of free Bose gas. The story is Einstein got a letter from young Bose saying that he has derived Planck's formula. He would like Einstein to see the correctness of it, and if possible, get it translated and published in a German journal. So he wrote a very polite letter, and Einstein must have been getting several letters, and apparently he was always very patient, looking for some important message from people around. So he looked at this letter very carefully and looked at the derivation. He was very impressed with it, and he sent it to the editor. He himself translated it, and it got published. Then Einstein said that Mr. Bose has considered photons. which have zero chemical potential, because as I said, as you heat the system, the number of photons will become more and more. So the photon number is not concerned. What if I have bosons in nature where they cannot be annihilated or created? He didn't say helium-4. We know the helium-4 is a boson. So he said, let me work it out. So he basically generalized the theory of Bose into a situation in which there is a finite density of boson. So he introduced the fugacity. And then he noticed a remarkable phenomena, which we call as Bose-Einstein condensation. And it's a very, that shows, distinguishes Einstein, how he was very careful to observe. I said that, now you can take this, and whenever you have summation, you can replace it by an integration. Right? I said, yeah, here. This is what you learn in calculus. You have a discrete sum, and then you replace it by integration. Einstein noticed that this is OK as long as the arguments don't have some funny behavior. So he did notice that there is one term here which becomes more singular. So they cannot be treated using the standard calculus and converted in integral. You'll have to isolate it out and then do the rest. So let me, this is something you must have learned in your class, but let me elaborate on it. It's something beautiful. This is actually going to be related to the fact that the Bose distribution function n of k, thermal average value, as a function of k, let's say magnitude of k, is going to have some funny behavior at k equal to 0. So what you find is, what Einstein found is, at very high temperature, this distribution function, number of bosons for a given average particle number, falls off like in Maxwell distribution, and then it hits some high value. So how do you see it? So in order to see that, we convert this integral, the summation, into an integral, and then you get this very beautiful equation. In terms of you convert this equation into summation and then divide, call n by v as rho, which is equal to 1 over volume, that is a volume occupied by one particle, and then also define so-called thermal de Broglie length. Is a very important concept. I will explain this. So it says, so the way Einstein thought about was, it's that intuition which made him to look this at carefully. Bosons are quantum waves. And if you capture a boson with a typical energy at finite temperature, it should have some de Broglie wave. How do I get that? So a typical energy of a particle is kT. I equate it to h cross square. So this k in particular, replace it by some lambda, 2 pi over wavelength. So this I will call as thermal de Broglie wavelength. So if I consider very high temperature, the thermal de Broglie wavelength will be short compared to the interparticle distance. So this is how the wave will look like, very intuitively. But as I go down in temperature, this wavelength will become larger and larger. So a state will come in which the de Broglie wave of a particle may start overlapping with the de Broglie wave of another particle. And they are indistinguishable. So Einstein thought in his mind, that's the rationale behind this mathematics, somehow these de Broglie waves, which are interfering destructively, when their wavelength become comparable to the interparticle distance, they may start interfering constructively and form a macroscopic wave. So this was an intuition. All this intuition can be justified by a careful analysis of this mathematics. And what is remarkable is, because we are dealing with a thermodynamic system, large number, and because we are living in three dimension, this particular phenomena that Einstein envisaged happens as a quantum phase, as a thermodynamic phase transition. I should also point out before I forget that this Bose-Einstein condensation, except for an application to helium-4, was like an academic exercise. But in the last 10, 20 years, it's more than that, because you can create so-called cold atoms in the lab. And they are essentially non-interacting, but their bosonic coherence comes in dramatic way through Bose condensation, which people have seen, and few Nobel Prizes have been already obtained. So this is what we are going to see now happening, that is, your cooperation among de Broglie waves of identical particles. So they start interfering. Essentially, you say they form one full macroscopic wave in which there are finite number of particles living. And this is what Bose-Einstein condensation is. And this is related to laser phenomena. In laser, we have photons. They are a particular mode, not necessarily long wavelength mode, but some particular mode of a particular wavelength is getting excited and coherently pumped. And it's like a Bose condensation with a finite wavelength. Then superconductor is like a Bose condensation at zero momentum, but not of fermions, but pair of fermions, which behave like bosons. So in that sense, this is very fundamental to understanding many, many coherence phenomena in solid state. You can use this. OK. Now, how do you go about solving this? Now, if you look at the mathematics, it has this form. So you finally write it in terms of 1 over b equals 1 over lambda cube times so when you make a continuum approximation, replace summation by integration, and do the thing, you get a very beautiful function which is related to, strangely, Riemann zeta function appears here. So where are my lambda contains temperature and the mass of the particle. And this carries information about density. So this is a fixed number. I want a chemical potential name or fugacity, which will give me this particular number if I put it. OK. Let's first look at graphically how this equation looks like. So this quantity, if you plot it as a function of z, has a behavior at z equal to 1. And you remember the formula for fugacity. So z equal to 1 corresponds to chemical potential 0. So it turns out in this Bose gas, when you solve the problem and look at the chemical potential behavior as a function of temperature, this is what Einstein found out. That is, there is a critical temperature. We will discuss this in some detail. At very high temperature, the fugacity is high and negative. Then as you change the temperature, the fugacity becomes smaller and smaller. And then at a particular point, it becomes 0. Then Einstein stopped at that point, because something remarkable is happening. The chemical potential is going to 0. So how will I solve this equation graphically, the equation that I've written down? So I can take this to this end, make it dimensionless. Then it turns out this function, when z equal to 1, has a value, numerical value, which is like 2.62. And that is actually Riemann zeta function at the value t by 2. It has some numerical value, 2.612. So for a temperature below TC, let's say this is where my lambda cube by V appears here. So there is a solution. In other words, you can do the summation on the right hand side and get a number with this particular value of fugacity, which will be equal to the number that you want. And that number gets exactly saturated when you put z equal to 1. In other words, as you change, so when you are at very high temperature, you have a fugacity value. You go to lower temperature, this solution, when this is equal to g, keeps shifting, and at a particular point, that is this point, 2.61, the right hand side saturates. So Einstein now carefully looked at this problem and he said that I have done this. Actually, I should be careful. I should isolate out, I will not go into the details of this, this term, which looked like an innocent term, it's going to help me when I go to lower temperature because I'm able to ignore this term because z is finite. So there is a 1 over volume factor. So in the thermodynamic limit, it becomes irrelevant. So I can satisfy this equation by an appropriate modification of z. So I can choose a chemical potential. But once I reach this point, this sum is not able to exhaust. So there is something left behind. So what Einstein said was, this is an indication that if you go back to this original problem, that this n totally is going to be a delta function plus the rest of the term. So please think about it. It's fairly straightforward. So I just want to solve an equation. I'm able to get a mu, which will give me the desired particle density or specific volume until mu becomes 0. Below that, there is a problem. This sum doesn't give me the desired number. So the rest has to come from here. Now, this factor is microscopic. It's vanishing as long as z is not equal to 1. But I know that the z approaches 1 in a particular way. So this can save the situation. That is, the denominator can become of the order of v. And then I can get some finite value, which will tell me that essentially what I'm doing is I am looking at the distribution n of k. I have n of k for values other than k. And if I integrate over, I get some number. The rest of the number, I pile it up in the zero momentum state. So basically, I have a macroscopic occupation of zero momentum state because this n naught for Einstein is proportional to the volume. And the rest of the particles are distributed here. So this is a phenomenon that happens just below TC. So he observed this by a careful analysis of this equation for chemical potential. Now, physically, it means something remarkable. What it means is, at very high temperature, the de Broglie wavelengths are very short. So particles are quantum interfering. But as, by the way, this value is a so-called critical point, that is lambda cube by V equal to 2.61 defines a temperature because lambda is related to T. So this says that when the de Broglie wavelength and interparticle distance are comparable of the order of unity, this transition takes place. So mu vanishing happens at a particular value of T because lambda is a function of temperature. So as you decrease the temperature, the de Broglie wave starts overlapping. At a particular wavelength, a fraction of particles cooperate. And these de Broglie waves overlap. And all of them, a finite fraction of particles, go into zero momentum state. So this is a new phenomena which Einstein discovered. Because it doesn't happen in thermal radiation. If you take thermal radiation, if you take any particular mode, the occupancy is 10, 15, you know, some finite number. Whereas here, because of this chemical potential condition, and because de Broglie waves start overlapping, there is a cooperativity which is coming through this beautiful mathematics, in which those particles are pulled into the zero momentum state just to, you know, gain entropy and energy and so on. So this is a remarkable quantum macroscopic condensation that Einstein observed, and London, who worked on it later, when he saw superfluidity in helium-4, London identified the phenomenon of superfluidity with this Bose-Einstein condensation. I will not go into the details, and called it as order in momentum space. We are used to order in real space, a crystalline order or a ferromagnetic order. Whereas here, there is sudden preference of all of us at a particular temperature, there is a preference of zero momentum state, a state in which the de Broglie wavelength is as large as the size of the system, I should have mentioned, because the zero momentum state is zero momentum, that is 2 pi by 0. So wave vector is 0, infinity. So the wave, think of periodic boundary condition, is a wave which is nodeless as you go around. So if I want to write down this wave function, it is simply 1 over square root of v. So if I take the square of it and integrate over volume, I will get unity. But the wave function is nodeless, it's featureless. What happens is many, many particles sit in a single wave function. And that is where all this macroscopic coherence phenomena comes in this sits there. So please work out this mathematics. It's very elegant and simple, and it's given in detail in Kersen Huang's book, and how to go beyond non-interacting case and what are its implications. So I wanted to do some more thing about let me spend a few minutes and then finish one of the thing I wanted to say. As I briefly pointed out, I said that when you come to quantum systems, many body systems, we are discussing phases, nature of phases, their peculiarity, their nature of excitations. But when it comes to mathematics of studying even ground state or zero temperature problem, the fact that classical statistical mechanics deals with infinite degrees of freedom, and quantum system many body theory also deals with infinite degrees of freedom, brings in a lot of unity in mathematics and concepts. So as I pointed out, sometimes understanding some of the properties of helium atom in the ground state, a liquid helium, reduces to understanding some classical statistical mechanics problem. So this back and forth interplay between quantum field theory, and this is very important. Then another thing I wanted to mention, I will finish with that, is that something that I don't comprehend. In classical mechanics, Newton's equations were deterministic. So there is no question about it. And then because there are too many degrees of freedom, Gibbs, Boltzmann introduced a concept of probability as a convenient tool to calculate things, and got results correct. Now when it comes to quantum mechanics, two things happen. One is I have a Hilbert space. Instead of configuration, I have Hilbert space. Now if I pick up any point in the Hilbert space or any state, it's already a quantum probability distribution function, which is a probability amplitude, so it can have negative values and complex values. On top of that, I introduce another probability of finding that point in Hilbert space in a thermal ensemble. So there is an interference between classical probability and quantum probability. We conveniently, you know, avoid asking questions about it by writing Boltzmann's prescription. But when you go to quantum dynamics of large system, phenomena of thermalizations and quantum quenching and so on, these questions become important. What are you? Are you talking about Boltzmann probability? Are you talking about the quantum probability that's inherent to the system? So things can interfere. So it's a very fascinating thing. There are questions which become very important when you go to non-equilibrium phenomena. Then the next thing I will leave, just make a statement and leave there, is something called eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. It's a very, very important suggestion that came from Schrodinger long back. And recently, people like Popescu, who is a distinguished visiting researcher, he works on it, and many other people. So when you come to quantum systems, I said that there is microeconomics on some description, which basically count the number of states in a given interval and gets everything. Now, apparently, Schrodinger and others hypothesized that when you come to quantum many-body system, you don't need to count states. Give me any many-body eigenstate at a given energy. A single eigenstate, let's say, described by some very complicated probability distribution function, which is in general complex because I'm talking about excited state, some eigenstate with an energy E. There may be many of them. I'll just pick up one. The statement is, this is a very pure state mathematically. If you calculate anything that you want, like internal energy or some correlation function, this particular quantum average with respect to your pure state with probability 1 will give you thermodynamic averages. So this is called eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, ETH. Somebody coming from Switzerland will like it, ETH. So I leave it with you that here, no notion of probability in the sense of Maxwell or Boltzmann or Gibbs. You have only quantum probability. You take one eigenstate. It may be difficult to calculate. That's a separate story. But it is supposed to give you, and then you can ask the question, okay, what is the corresponding temperature? Then you would say that you can answer by calculating internal energy in a subsystem here, and then finding entanglement entropy, and then getting temperature, and so on. But the point is, a many-body eigenstate, if you can find one, has sufficient information to give you thermodynamics at a particular temperature. So this also holds good for understanding critical phenomena. Okay, thank you. I'll close here. And if there are any questions, I will.